Hello, and welcome to another podcast in our series, Resilience and Reinvention. From the Resilience Centre, I'm Lynn Worsley, founder and the director of the centre. In this series, we're looking at a whole host of dynamics that happened, and in a range of ways, or continue to happen, as a result of the COVID pandemic years. Here's one really interesting aspect of it all. There's been a notable increase in the diagnosis of attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, ADHD, in both children and adults. So what's going on? Adam Wright is a clinical psychologist at the Resilience Centre, and he's involved in a lot of really important work in the arena of neurodiversity. Adam has a series of revealing insights and answers on this unexpected consequence of COVID that we're still experiencing. He's speaking here with Lee Hatcher.
Adam, thanks very much for your time.
Thank you.
Now, this is a really fascinating and, as Lynn said, an unexpected aspect of COVID. So let's set a bit of a groundwork to begin with. Explain to us exactly what is ADHD.
ADHD is a diagnosis we use in mental health to describe differences in someone's, how their brain functions. Mm-hmm. In particular, it's got to do with there being differences in the frontal lobes. So this influences what we call executive functioning. These are things like people with ADHD, they struggle with things like organizing, planning, sustaining attention. It can also cause hyperactivity. Basically, all of these differences compared to the average person are there, and they cause significant distress or impairment for the person. And this starts in childhood. These differences are essentially what you're born with, so they're something you live with, and they can also be present in adults as well.
So the stages of ADHD we'll get to, which is very interesting. It's something that, as you say, both children and adults experience. Are we getting better at identifying this?
Yeah, I think we are. I think we're much more aware of what it is, what to look for, and how it presents differently in different people. And I think in the past, in my experience, people really tended to think of it much more in terms of the hyperactivity side of things. Right. So, for example, teachers were very good at identifying hyperactive children in their classroom, and so those kids got picked up for ADHD. But there is actually another type of ADHD, which is not so much about being hyperactive, but having trouble sustaining attention and having trouble with memory and things like that. And that's, we call that the inattentive type of ADHD. And that is, I think, getting better picked up now, because we're realizing that just because a kid's not necessarily hyperactive or disruptive in class, it doesn't mean they might not still be struggling in some way.
Is diagnosis easy?
No, it's not. Okay. Diagnosis requires a pediatrician or a psychiatrist or a psychologist to look at the history of the child and their behavior to get different reports. But one of the important things to establish with ADHD is that it's not just happening in one place. If a child is only really having trouble at school, but they don't have any differences at home, then it's not really a brain difference. It's probably got to do with their environment. So we really need information from, say, teachers and from parents to help us. We often do cognitive testing as well to rule out other factors that might be causing differences. So it's quite an extensive process to get a diagnosis.
When was it first identified,
Adam? That's an interesting question, Lee. Actually, descriptions of the behavior of children similar to ADHD actually have been found in the medical literature, actually going back to the 18th century.
Wow, okay.
Yeah. In the 1960s, it first made it into our diagnostic manual. There's a big book called The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, Mental Disorders. It first made it in the 1960s. It was called hyperkinetic disorder, which was really focusing on the hyperactivity side. When we got to the 1980s, they started to realize the inattentive type as well. It started to kind of take on that term ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. And now we have it really established as the hyperactivity and attention are both part of the same umbrella. They're just different types, whereas before they were kind of almost seen as different disorders.
Very interesting. So what on earth went on with COVID, even still today with more and more adults working from home, that we're seeing this increase in the instance of ADHD?
So I can't speak to necessarily being any increase in diagnosis because of COVID. I don't know if that research has been done. But I can say in the number of people I've spoken to over the past couple of years, that when I've spoken to people who have been diagnosed, they've told me a couple of things. When it comes to children, a lot of parents noticed how much their kids were struggling with online learning. The thing about trying to learn from home is these kids would struggle with attention, but they had the pressure of school and the teacher like watching them all the time.
Expectations, yes.
Yeah, exactly. When they're online learning, their parents were working as well. They weren't being watched the same way. they're having forced to read a screen and do work. Parents really started to see their kids really struggle to do the work that they didn't know about because they weren't at school.
Yes.
So that was one aspect. When it came to adults, one thing that happened for adults was that working from home, again, there's a lot more freedom, a lot less accountability. There's no social pressure. People were forced to make more choices about what they would do. And a lot of people with ADHD would find that they were really struggling to pay attention, that they couldn't see as much when they had the social pressure of work. And also as well, they could use lots of coping strategies that developed to get by, ways to deal with their feelings, things like that. Those were all taken away with COVID as well, you know, all the activities you could do. And that made people really kind of lost, and that really showed them these difficulties that they weren't really seeing before. Another thing I'd also say is that during COVID, we had a lot of time to reflect on ourselves and our behavior.
Yes.
And one way we were really connecting with each other was online. And what we started to see, especially I think during COVID, was that people explaining their experience and sharing their experience online, it connects people who would otherwise never be connected.
Yep.
So people could share their experiences. I'm having trouble concentrating. I'm having these things. And other people saying, oh, that's ADHD. And so people are sharing lived experience and learning about it that way, whereas otherwise they would never have known, because the likelihood that they would come across someone with ADHD just in their everyday life might be quite small.
Often that kind of connection is very useful, but also there are dangers in that as well, I suppose.
Yes. I would think there are some people who potentially maybe misdiagnosed. One of the things about ADHD is that anxiety can be very similar. It's quite common for people to struggle with concentration or organizing or planning because you're anxious. Also, too, if you're struggling from depression, it can also affect those things too. So I think there'd be some people maybe thinking they have ADHD who maybe didn't. But I think a lot of people would have been correctly diagnosed because they first learnt about the diagnosis and seeing other people, not just kind of saying, oh, these are symptoms on a piece of paper, but actually saying, this is the struggles I have in my life and I have ADHD, and other people kind of thinking, oh, wow, I have those same struggles.
So in practical terms, what were those adults noticing about their lives or their day-to-day in the midst of the COVID upheavals and lockdown? What was new for them, Adam?
Well, I think one thing would be that they would find they're just not getting tasks done the way that they would normally do. They couldn't follow through with things. I think they would have struggled to sit still at their desk. I think you would find that we all struggled a lot with a lot of aspects of working from home, but they would have found it even harder because they would have really relied on a lot more social contact, being in the presence of people.
Yes.
But they just didn't have that, and they were just left to their own devices. And it's so easy working from home to just get up from your desk and do something else. And if you're having trouble concentrating and that temptation is there, I think these people would have just found themselves just wandering off and being like, why am I not at my desk anymore?
Wow.
What's happened?
Yeah. So you've noticed a clear increase in the numbers of people coming forward with a presentation of ADHD symptoms, both children and adults, who've been making it through sometimes for quite some time without knowing what was really going on.
Exactly right. One thing I should also say is that one of the things that we always thought about ADHD in the past was that kids grew out of it. And I reckon there would be a lot of people who, as adults, who actually probably had potentially a diagnosis or it was thought about them in childhood, but then they, as children, weren't really aware of this.
Hmm.
And then they grow up and they start having these troubles again. And then they're looking back and realizing, and now we know that for some people, maybe they grow out of the symptoms, but for some people, they don't.
Yes.
And so actually, they were looking back and realizing, oh, wow, you know, I'm having troubles now, but I actually had the same troubles when I was younger too.
It's very interesting, yeah. So for both kids and adults, even employers, I suppose, they now have a chance to understand themselves better, maybe a different kind of life. In what ways? Again, practically, Adam.
So I remember people I've talked to with ADHD telling me that one of the things that's made a big difference is realizing that they shouldn't push themselves to try and do things the way other people do.
Mm.
There's a lot of information out there about how to set goals, how to concentrate, how to focus, how to get things done. But for people with ADHD, their brain works differently. For example, they have a lot more trouble doing things that are not, unless they're interesting, it's really hard for them to do it.
Okay.
And so, for example, one thing I work with a lot with people with ADHD on is how to change how you do things so that it not being interesting is less of a problem. You know, cutting it, breaking it down, not pushing yourself to do it all in one go, so it's less difficult in the moment, and trying to find ways to make it more enjoyable for you. So with people having a diagnosis, you can start realizing, oh, I can do things differently and I'm allowed to do things differently.
And that's one of the big questions. Are they allowed?
Yes. 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 Yeah. They can actually, it gives them a license to be like, I shouldn't expect myself to be like and do things the way everyone else does. I can actually just, you know, work out the way that works for me and then do that. And one of the things about sharing about it online was that people sharing about their ADHD and their lived experience also meant that they also shared a lot of the things that worked for them.
Strategies.
Yeah. Strategies. Yeah. So I'm hearing people telling me about the things they learned online and me thinking, yeah, I would have told you the same thing too.
Good stuff. What's the range of responses you've noticed when people receive a diagnosis? Is it relief, concern, confusion maybe?
At the moment, because people are learning about it and they're coming in, they're asking the question, I think I have ADHD. For a lot of people, it's actually a relief feeling yeah. because now they have an explanation.
A framework
yes. to explain why they've been feeling the way they are. I think that's the difference. I think perhaps in the past, people would probably have a more negative reaction if it wasn't what they were expecting.
Okay.
I think some people have struggled a bit when they thought they've had ADHD, but they've turned out it hasn't been that. But for those people, I actually think it's also a good thing because at the end of the day, as a psychologist, what we're saying, regardless of whether you have a diagnosis or not, there's always something you can do
okay.
about your difficulties.
Yes. Yeah.
So for myself, if I was doing an assessment and I said to someone, I don't think you have ADHD, I'd still be giving them a whole host of strategies. It's just that it might be different strategies for them because it's not the same.
Okay. What would you say to an adult who's listening to our podcast now who might wonder, wow, this might be me?
So it's very easy to look at the criteria and to hear about people's lived experience and connect with that. But as I kind of said earlier, there are lots of reasons for why you might be experiencing those things. One of the things about ADHD is that it is that neurodevelopmental disorder. It's something you've had all your life.
Okay.
So the best thing for an adult who's questioning it is to really think about their early childhood years. One of the diagnostic criteria we have for assessment is that you had it before the age of 12.
Right.
So if you can look back on primary school and see, was I exhibiting any of these kinds of differences back then? For example, did I have trouble completing homework? Did I tend to drift off in class? I like to get people to look at their old school reports okay. and actually see if there's teacher comments, because sometimes teachers would pick up on these things, but they didn't know it was ADHD.
Yes.
And you'll see comments in there in the reports like they need to pay more attention.
And parents might have thought, naughty child.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes, definitely. You know, or not motivated or just not meeting their potential. So I really think, you know, if you think you might have it, you want to look and see if there was some differences back then.
Yes.
And that will really help work out whether it is probably ADHD or maybe it could be anxiety or depression or something else.
Hence, in some ways, and in some cases, the relief when they finally get that framework.
Exactly, yeah. Yes.
Can we even go beyond what's been, I think, a fascinating and revealing discussion to look at a specific instance, perhaps, of someone who's lived with ADHD, what that life has been like, Adam?
Yeah, okay. So there's a person I know who's a woman in her mid-30s. She described always struggling with things like motivation and getting work done, worked in an office role in communications fields, things like that, and never really understood why this was the case, just knew that it was difficult.
But still managing to get through in ways.
Yeah, still managing to get through.
Yeah.
Found her niche in particular ways, very good at contributing in discussion and problem solving and working with people, but it came when the rubber hit the road and you had to kind of maybe write something or get something done, could often get stuck.
Okay.
That was her experience. And also could recall a lot of difficulties with completing work when she was younger, but never put the two together, as you wouldn't. Struggled a lot with anxiety through and gone to therapy for many years, learning online about other people's lived experiences and realizing that's me too in everyday life situations. Made her start investigating it, talking to psychologists, making the connection between those early childhood experiences and the current ones. And from that, that led her to see a psychiatrist in her case who gave her the diagnosis, and that's made a big difference because now for her, what it is about is that she can look at her difficulties and not just kind of be critical of herself and say, you should be able to do this, but say, no, this makes sense. There's a reason why you're having trouble with this. Let's find a new way to do it. When I talk to her, she talks about little differences she's making in her life, little, you know, ways to put things or strategies that she's implementing, which are changing the game for her.
Yes, of course. Has been revealing, has been fascinating. Thank you so much, Adam, for your time.
Thank you.
Great stuff.
Thanks so much for joining us for this fascinating conversation in our Resilience and Reinvention series of podcasts. I'm Lynn Worsley. You can catch the other podcasts in this great series and lots of other conversations and resources at our website, www.theresiliencecentre.com.au.